Well, at the tail end of this year, Congress managed to break through its usual partisan gridlock and pass significant legislation that replaced the controversial No Child Left Behind Act. President Obama signed the new Every Student Succeeds Act earlier this month, and it departs from No Child Left Behind in several important ways. The act reverses the use of student test scores as a means to evaluate teachers, and it prevents the Department of Education from incentivizing or coercing states to adopt the Common Core. Now, those are just two reasons why President Obama said he was happy to sign the Every Student Succeeds Act.
The goals of No Child Left Behind, the predecessor of this law, were the right ones. High standards, accountability, closing the achievement gap, making sure that every child was learning, not just some. But in practice, it often fell short. It didn't always consider the specific needs of each community. It led to too much testing during classroom time. It often forced schools and school districts into cookie-cutter reforms that didn't always produce the kinds of results that we wanted to see.
Well, we wanted to ask a local education expert what she thought of the Every Student Succeeds Act. So we turned to Nancy Carlson Page, Professor Emerita of Early Childhood Education at Lesley University. Carlson Page was not optimistic.
He's late to the party, and it's been rough. I mean, his education secretary, Arne Duncan, did many things to further the problems that Obama's identifying here. There are improvements in the new act, and the teachers' union supports it, and there are some positive things. But as far as early childhood education is concerned, I worry about this idea of high-quality early childhood education because I think it's become, a buzzword for rigorous instruction of four-year-olds.
Nancy Carlson Page is one of the nation's leading experts on early childhood education. Just last month, she was given the Deborah Meyer Hero in Education Award. And in her acceptance speech, she furthered her skepticism of ed reform, saying, quote, "Never in my wildest dreams could I have foreseen the situation we find ourselves in today." And why? Well, Carlson Page described to us a recent visit to a low-income neighborhood north of Miami. Here's what she said she saw.
There were children sitting at tables copying from the blackboard, and they were little, 5 years old. It was a kindergarten. The words were, no talking, hands to yourself, sit still.
Those were the words
they were copying.
From the blackboard.
The teacher was way over in the corner testing one little boy and asking him question after question on a computer-based test. And that little boy was sinking lower and lower and lower in his seat. And she kept saying, sit up. And she would ask him another question. And then she would shout over to those other kids, be quiet, because once in a while they were trying to say something to each other. I'm not blaming the teacher. She was under the kinds of pressure I'm describing there, where the funding depended on these test scores. She was a perfectly kind person who was boxed in like teachers are today. It was a situation that's been created, really, by the ed reform policies that have now borne down heavily in early childhood classrooms.
In your speech, you talked about how the kinds of learning a lot of kids are getting today actually flies in the face of what we understand about how their brains work.
Oh, absolutely. Optimal learning is going to come when children are using their bodies, using their senses, engaging with each other, manipulating materials, playing. And the more you take aspects of that away, such as just sitting them passively and having them memorize letters and numbers, the less optimal is their learning. Also, when they're engaged in play and active learning, they're building their own ideas, they're inventing their own ideas from within. It's not just a matter of memorizing things that someone outside of them is asking them to do.
Yeah. Can we take a step back here for a second? Because there's a question I wanted to ask you because of your long experience in this particular part of education specifically. I wonder, where do you think the cultural push for assessments and for testing has really come from? Because, in a way, it is actually bipartisan. You know, both President Bush signed the No Child Left Behind Act, but, until recently, Arne Duncan, as Secretary of Education, was, he was a huge champion of the Common Core. Now, different parties, but ultimately, testing and assessment was sort of part of, you know, both sides of that puzzle.
It's a very complicated answer, and the answer you got would depend on to whom you were speaking. I do think there are political forces at work. There is a movement to privatize schools. But in early childhood education, I think one core reason, and one reason why you have bipartisan support, is that there is this long-standing misconception of what learning looks like with young kids. So they have a picture in their mind of what learning looks like. People sitting at desks or sitting in chairs and being taught directly by a teacher specific skills and ideas. They really don't understand how concepts, cognitive, social, and emotional concepts, are built in children, and capacities for problem solving, self-regulation, imagination and creativity, invention, mastery, through play.
Paint a picture briefly, if you could, of what, ideally, what does a preschool look like? What does a kindergarten look like?
It looks like a very active place, which, if it's not a practiced eye, might look like chaos, but it isn't, because there's a whole lot going on with activity areas in block building, in dramatic play, in science, in the arts, collage, math materials, all kinds of interesting projects going on. And children make choices with teachers' guidance about where to spend their time. And they are actively engaged with all of these rich materials in the classroom. The teacher has a profound role to play, but it's not the direct teaching, memorize these facts role. It's a role that involves a lot of knowledge of child development and then very artful observation of where every child is. And for teachers, knowing the developmental progressions of each skill and knowing how to identify them and then making decisions about how to scaffold new learning based on what they see.
Yeah. So here's where I think there's a particular heartbreak when it comes to preschool and kindergartners, because I'm thinking back to that classroom you were describing earlier, the one that's as far away from what you were just telling us as could possibly be. Because I can imagine perhaps that teacher would say to you, well, Nancy, I would love to have a classroom that looks like that with play centers and activities and play-based learning, but I can't do that because if I do that, the kids aren't going to pass these assessments, and then our school is going to lose its funding, and we already are very severely underfunded anyway.
Those children in low-income areas are in under-resourced schools, so the classes are often larger, and the children have a lot of needs. When children come to school and they're coming from poverty, they may be hungry, they may have experienced, you know, stress at home, there may be an unemployed parent, they may have food insecurity, all sorts of issues that are going to affect their ability to learn. And we don't deal with those in this country. We're trying to say that we should just have good education that's going to solve those social problems, and it isn't, because those problems occur outside of the classroom and have to be solved there.
But there are many, many people out there who say, Nancy Carlson Page, for the good of America, in, you know, in this global world that we live in, there should be standards in kindergarten. There should be standards in preschool. You know, we should have expectations. And if teachers and schools aren't meeting those expectations, then there's something wrong with them and they need help.
I'm glad you brought this up, because I'm not opposed to standards. I don't know an accomplished early childhood professional who would have ever written standards like the ones in the Common Core. There are 90 standards for kindergarten just in literacy and math. So every teacher is supposed to accomplish 90 standards or more for every child in the classroom. And they're very specific, fact-based standards that, to my thinking, are superficial and kind of disconnected from children's active learning in the early years. So if one of the things we call for at my organization, Defending the Early Years, is a consortium of early childhood professionals who can identify what standards should look like. They would look very, very different from what the Common Core standards look like.
Yeah. Is there any way to get to your ideal classroom without just pouring more money into the
system? No, it takes money, but it takes a lot of foresight, creativity, ingenuity, planning, problem solving, including early childhood educators. You know, money's part of it, but how about commitment to young kids? How about commitment to families?
Some might say, hey, in a way, this is a great time for early childhood education in America, because there's more attention and emphasis being put on it than we've ever seen before. I mean, President Obama has actually called for universal pre-K. We haven't had a president who's so forthrightly said those early years are as important as they are beforehand.
Yeah, that's one of the things I'm most worried about and have been ever since I saw this trend coming along. It's fantastic that they want universal pre-K. But what I'm worried about is when I hear someone like Bill de Blasio, who's trying to implement universal pre-K in New York City, say we want rigorous instruction for four-year-olds, quote unquote. I'm worried.
Well, my final question for you,
yeah,
Nancy, is can you let us occupy the spirit of a five-year-old for a moment? Because
sure.
Just on personal observation,
yeah,
I've noticed that, that what you see more than anything in a spirited five-year-old while playing is a sense of eternal optimism, right? Because they're crafting a world around them as they would have it. So give me a reason, one at least, to be optimistic about the future or a way forward for early childhood education.
See, the only way to really become an intelligent person is to build ideas from the inside, something you truly comprehend. To the extent that we can encourage children to play, because what they're doing is actually creating some scenario that they invent based on part of their experience, part of their imagination, it's at the core of inner resilience play.
Yeah.
So if we can commit ourselves to finding ways for children to play, encourage them to get off screens and encourage and give them every opportunity for recess and play inside schools, that is the best thing we can do for them right now.
Well, Nancy Carlson Page is Professor Emerita of Early Childhood Education at Lesley University and author of Taking Back Childhood, A Proven Roadmap for Raising Confident, Creative, Compassionate Kids. Such a pleasure to speak with you, Nancy. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Meghna.
And that's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.